What brings you to church this Easter Sunday morning? Maybe you are one of those people here who is here every Sunday without fail. I love you. Or you might make it only occasionally. I'm glad to have you here with us this morning. Some of you may be here with family. Others of you may be here because your parents made you come. But whether it is out of long habit or just because today is a special day, I want to ask you, what brings you to church today? Maybe you grew up in church and it seems like you've just always believed, but even so, you still have questions. Maybe you're skeptical about this whole God, Jesus, church thing, and yet you're here anyway today. This could be your first Easter without someone. And you're hoping to hear some words of comfort and hope. Or maybe you're just hoping I won't preach too long because you've got family dinner at noon and you really wish I'd just get to the point. But whatever brings you to church today, I think that you will find that we are in good company with Jesus' followers on that very first Easter Sunday morning. The stories from that first Easter and from the days that followed tell of people who were experiencing a whole range of emotions. From the fear of the women at the tomb and the disciples huddled together behind locked doors, to their anxiety as they wondered who is going to roll away the stone and where has the body gone. There's Peter's guilt, Thomas's doubt, the discouragement of those disciples who were on their way to the village of Emmaus, who had hoped that Jesus was going to be the one who would redeem Israel, none of whom were expecting to find him alive on this first Easter Sunday morning. John's account in the reading that we had for today, in just this passage, we encounter the grief of Mary, the confusion and skepticism of Peter, and the first signs of nascent belief in John. A little bit of self-congratulatory, if you ask me, because he's the one who wrote the book. But whatever brings you here today, the Gospels would seem to say that that experience is welcome here because it was welcome at the empty tomb. And in all the places where the risen Jesus met with his frightened and anxious and ashamed and doubtful followers on that first Easter day and in the days that followed. So whatever brings you here today, the risen Jesus can meet you in that experience. Not that we can do it all today in this brief message, not if you're going to make your brunch reservations anyway, but John zeroes in on one character, as he's so good at doing throughout his gospel. And in this case, he zeroes in on Mary, on her grief, on her tears, asking, "Why are you weeping?" Mary, who had come from the small fishing village of Magdala on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus had done so much of his ministry, who had experienced Jesus' healing power firsthand, and had left home to follow him, just as Jesus' more familiar male disciples had done. According to Luke, and what would have been shocking for the time, she was one of several women who traveled and learned and shared with Jesus and his other disciples and joined him on this last journey up to Jerusalem. And who, when the other disciples had all gone and fled and gone into hiding, stood in grief and terror at the foot of the cross. It was Mary and the other women who saw where his body was laid in the tomb after the crucifixion. And they were the first to come to the tomb on that Easter Sunday morning to continue their somber rituals of grief and loss. According to Mark and Luke, the women brought spices and perfumes with them to anoint the body, according to Jewish funeral customs. They were late in getting this done because the Sabbath had interrupted their preparations for the burial. It had all been so hastily done on Friday night. There's always so much to do when a death occurs, as some of you know all too well. There's legal issues to be sorted out, a funeral and burial to be arranged. What they would have done without the kindness of people like Nicodemus and Joseph, who can say? All the while, people still need to be fed, dishes need to be done, laundry needs to be cleaned. Even the simplest tasks can be so hard, and none of them are content to wait for grief to pass. John tells us that it was still dark when Mary made her way to the tomb. She was up early as she had hardly slept. And in her grief, it may have felt as if the sun was never going to rise again. But what she found at the gravesite was more than she could bear. The tomb was thrown open. The body was missing, and the grave despoiled. It was as if you were to arrive at the cemetery plot of a loved one the day after the burial and find the grave trampled on and the flowers kicked aside and the marker broken or vandalized. Who could do such a thing? Couldn't they just let him rest in peace? Now there was nothing left of him. Nothing at all. Last vestiges of memory gone. And in Mary's fury of panic and grief, she ran to the disciples for help. It was only an hour or so later, when Peter and John had finally walked away from the tomb, helpless and confused, that Mary finally, after everything that had happened, everything she had been holding together, allowed herself to break down in tears. As Mary stood there alone, crying in the early morning light, a voice spoke to her out of the cold silence of the tomb. "Woman, why are you weeping?" Bending low to look inside, she saw two angels sitting where the body had been, at the head and the foot. Grief can be so disorienting, and in this surreal state, Mary is somehow unsurprised by the sight of these otherworldly figures sitting in the midst of the tomb. She simply answers their question almost unconsciously, speaking aloud her sense of helplessness and loss and desperation. "They have taken my Lord away, and I don't know where they've put him." No sooner had she articulated her grief than another voice addressed her from behind, asking in the same words, "Woman, why are you weeping? Who is it you're looking for?" This isn't the only account in which Jesus' disciples fail to recognize him after he had risen from the dead. Having left the grave clothes behind, he is beyond death. He is transformed forever. And through her tears, Mary supposes him to be the gardener, the caretaker of the tombs. She pleads with him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." So desperate is she to recover some part of him, any part of him. It's only when Jesus calls her by name, Mary, she recognizes him for who he is. Not lost, but found. Not dead, but alive. Beyond all hope and all expectation, he is risen. Why are you weeping? These are, in John's gospel, the first words spoken by the risen Christ, spoken with such tenderness and compassion. Paul Duke says that when Christ comes alive from the tomb, he comes asking about the meaning of our tears. It's important to understand that this question is not an attempt to shut down or dismiss her grief or emotions, as if to say, "What are you crying about? Pull yourself together." But it's an invitation to Mary to name her grief and loss. It's so often true of the questions that God asks in the Bible, the questions that Jesus asks, that they come at some of our most vulnerable moments, but are an invitation to deeper engagement with God. Jesus asks a paralytic by the pool, "Do you want to be made well?" He asks his bewildered disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" God asks a burned out prophet on the mountain, what are you doing here? Even at our lowest and most vulnerable in another garden long, long ago, God met Adam and Eve not with accusations, but with questions. Where are you? Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I told you not to eat from? God invites us through these questions into a deeper engagement with Him. And Jesus asks Mary, why are you weeping? With tenderness and compassion, Jesus meets Mary in her grief, just as He met Thomas in his doubt, Peter in his guilt, the Emmaus disciples in their discouragement, just as God has been meeting people in their brokenness and shame and weakness and fear and uncertainty for centuries upon centuries. Why are you weeping? Jesus calls us by name, as He calls Mary. Invites us to name our griefs and to give them to Him. It's in John's Gospel, remember, at the tomb of Lazarus, that Jesus weeps with us. It was a favorite memory verse of everyone who had to memorize something in Sunday school. Jesus wept. Jesus weeps with us. And we can see Him as Mary did through our tears and not just in our joy. Another one of our readings today, the prophet Isaiah declared, the Lord will swallow up death forever. He will wipe away the tears from all faces. That promise is already beginning to be fulfilled. When the risen Jesus came and began to wipe the tears from Mary's eyes in the garden, the power of death had been broken once and for all. It could not hold Him, nor will it finally hold any who belong to Him. Scriptures resonate with triumph. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? But there's a not yet to the story as well. We still experience the pain of grief and loss and separation, and we'll continue to do so until Jesus comes again. There's something bittersweet in what Jesus tells Mary in that garden. Do not hold on to me, he says, for I've not yet ascended to the Father. Exegetes and theologians can debate the full import of Jesus' words, but for Mary, they meant something very simple and very difficult. She had to let go. Her final reunion with Jesus would have to wait. But she could let go with hope. With hope in the resurrection and new life, with hope that death will not have the last word, with hope that Jesus lives and reigns and will finally wipe away the tears from all faces. And in that hope, we live today. Amen. Amen. Amen.